license plate down on his car, dark red down here. Lieutenant Governor, I think, lost a set off of his. I had the front number three torn loose on mine where they're trying to get it off. Thank God, with Juno rust, they weren't able to get it. I think Senator Page makes a point, those souvenir hunters and people who are trying to take the marble out of the bathrooms or what have you. Matter of fact, the sign in front of the president's office was taken off the wall during the interim by some, I presume, souvenir hunter. I don't think janitor for events. There is an address that goes on the building itself, people who want a piece of the rock, so to speak.
Have a piece of the government.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think that the President of the Senate made a very excellent suggestion that it appear in the public safety budget on that. With that, I call the question.
Question has been called, please.
Repetitive motion, ready.
The motion, if rather than reading, I stated, or I'm going ahead and read it like this, the motion was to have security guards 24 hours.
Two or three.
With three.
I just wanted to make sure that it's ready for the record properly, because there are two suggestions in here, and it wasn't clear.
24 hours, Madam Chairman, with iron guards.
At a cost of.
Till the end of the session.
Are you ready for the question?
Representative Cato?
Yes.
Representative Davidson?
No.
Senator Page?
Yes.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
Representative Grusendorf?
Yes.
Senator Cadullo?
Yes.
Representative Copeland?
Yes.
Representative Miller?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Ulmer? Senator Booth?
Yes.
Senator Bennett?
Yes.
Senator Binkley?
With the military. Lots of security there.
Motion carries, Madam Chairman. We have, 11 years, one day.
Thank you very much. So be it. In your package, you have the 1986 Legislative Affairs Audit Report, done by Pete Marlton, I think that's what it is. Yeah, they were sent out. I think all of you have the copies, right? What would you, please tell us about the governor's office mergers with the legislative information offices in the public areas?
Well, for the council's information, we have, we were contacted by the new governor's office and asked about the possibility of merging three of the LIOs, legislative information offices. One is in Bethel, one's in Nome, and one is in Cotsville. The Bethel office has been funded by the council primarily for a half a year, and then the finance committee has taken reappropriation monies and turned that into a full-time, more or less a full-time office. Nome and Cotsville are both part-time offices as far as the agency is concerned, as far as the legislature is concerned. The governor's office did recognize that for the most part, we meet all of the needs that they have in all of the areas where our LIOs are, as far as disseminating information from the executive branch. They are willing, as the memorandum indicates, they are willing to pay the additional costs that would be incurred to keep those offices year-round. This results in a savings to the governor's office. It also enables us to have a full-time year-round office in those three locations. We do, in fact, we would save some budget money in Nome because we would be able to move into the state office building in Nome, which is a much better facility than where we have been located prior to that. The, we would get the governor's office space in, no. So I think it really is a good move, and it does enable us to reduce cost, overall cost to the state, and to some small degree, it will reduce the amount of money that we are spending. And if there are any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Endicott, have you a ballpark figure of what this would save?
Well, the only savings that we would have, the savings to the legislature would be the fact that we have taken a year-round office, we have to pay the office space year-round in Nome. And that would be the lease cost on that building. And I don't have that figure right at hand. It was 21.6. So it'd be 21,600. Does that include utilities, ma'am?
We budget for utilities.
We budget.
In that 21.6 includes the lease and the electric.
So it would be a 21,600 savings.
Okay, 177.
There's no motion.
No, it's just for information, but if there is any objection or anything, we are working with the governor's office towards that end, and I want the council to know that.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Our questions on the audit stuff from the school this time?
Certainly, we're collecting through the 86.
You went through it. You went over it so fast.
Well, I just put it in your packets. I said that so you'd be.
Oh, I read these things. I like these. I get a kick out of reading these audits. If I may, through the chair, to the executive director, in Exhibit 1, in the letter to the management, they have made several recommendations. One is that the person preparing the daily cash balance initial that form. Is that being done now?
The person preparing that balance, it is being done, but we have not been, we've had a scheduling problem to get a separate person from picking up the cash. I don't think that's been resolved yet as of yet.
No, we haven't, because we were having a few problems in the lounge with operating the cash register. The person that was trying to make that reconciliation was having some difficulties, and then after it was kind of a training period. But yes, she definitely is initialing what they suggested there. We have implemented everything that they suggested in this management plan.
Thank you very much. And then under disbursements, under the control, the document control procedure, having the person who prepares the contracts sign off on that they are the person who prepares it. Again, a control item. Is that being done on contract preparation?
Yes, Senator. We have no. We will be able to take care of all of these things and within the next, at least within the next couple of weeks. And most of them we have taken care of, and we will be able to respond.
And one more, Madam Chairman, if I may, under Exhibit 2 in the first paragraph, it always concerns me when accounting firms have a caveat in their analysis that our study and evaluation is more limited than would be necessary to express an opinion on the system of internal accounting and administrative controls taken as a whole. That leads me to believe that they didn't have access to everything, or they didn't get to look at everything, or there are certain things that are off limits. Is that the case, or is this just a, why did they put that sentence in there?
Well, partially, Senator, that is the case. They don't go over and audit the Department of Administration's procedure, but they're auditing separately. And I tend to agree there's always something there that they.
That kind of language was in the North Slope Borough accounting booklets for the North Slope Borough, and I'm just wondering if we have a similar kind of accounting procedure, or what is it exactly we do that would warrant that kind of sentence?
I don't think that's because of anything that we are doing. I think I was really pleased with this management letter in particular. I think we cleaned up the contracts and the controls. The lapsing of monies, the handling of receipts, and
overall, I think your audit was very good, but I'm still curious as to that sentence and would love to know the reason for it.
Maybe if we pay their liability insurance, they would take that out.
Well, and if that's the case, then that we need to know that. But those kinds of sentences always bother me. Thank you, Madam Chairman, for your comments.
Before we leave that again, in order not to be glossing over, so on further questions or comments. That was not my intention. Thank you. As has been the custom the last few years, I'd like to ask if for the budget subcommittee to begin their work, that would be myself, Senator Bates, and Speaker Cruz and Dorsey, if you would please serve on that committee. You have a letter in your packet from M. Mike Miller, and I always have had difficulty, so you should have heard me trying to reach Mike's office as well as the other office, trying to determine if this is a print, a paper, or a what, that we were trying to accept, and I think we finally determined it was not your office, Representative Miller, but was indeed former Representative Miller's office. It's my understanding from this, and we've tried to receive, there is a print of this historic painting in areas. I understand at present time it's in the vendors.
It's up on the third floor, at least it used to be in one of the hallways.
I asked him, it's not there at all.
It's not there at all. They think it's in the governor's mansion, or it's not the governor's mansion. Well, somewhere around here, there is a...
Must be a county procedure.
Somewhere around here, there is supposed to be a print of this painting that has been offered to the legislature, the original painting, for the cost of crating and shipping. I have been unable today to get what that cost would be. And I guess this was a pending since last year. I wanted to...
Where is the painting located?
I think the painting is in the lower 48. Yes.
Madam Chair, and I called the Anchorage Museum today and asked them about the caliber of this particular artist and the inventory that they have on board. And this is quite a, you know, famous international artist. If the painting is in good condition, it would be a wonderful gift to accept on behalf of the legislature. They recommend, though, depending on the care that it's had and where it's stored and how it's done, and if it is oil, it could be in such terrible condition, possibly, that we'd have more problems than it could be worth, and we'd have a restoration bill on it, too. So they recommended that we get some assessment to the condition of the painting, if it is indeed oil, and if there's a restoration necessary of the painting. But the artist and the quality of the work and the inventory that is already in Alaska is very good, and they would recommend that we look into it further.
It was my intention, if it met with your approval, to investigate just that and see, find out, you know, this is new to me as it is to some of you, but I thought we should respond as quickly as possible to the artist and to look into the procedure. You had something you wanted to say.
I suspect in the area of its residence, you can find someone with some competence, probably survey for $250. Insurance for it, say it's approximately $50,000 value. Insurance shipping fees will probably be $600. Just to give you off the top from my experiences.
Senator Boone.
Yes, I was going to say, Madam Chair, I'd be pleased to go to Laguna Beach, California, which is in the tree.
That's very kind of you. I think you can do it though, without taking you from your duties. Yes.
I'm sure. I believe there is a print of the painting down in the governor's office in the hallway.
There was, sir, but we can't find it.
Was it ripped off and collected?
If I might get permission from you to pursue this, and if it's not an exorbitant amount and the painting is in good shape, I'd like to be able to go ahead and accept that with a letter. Yes.
Sure. I just moved. It didn't cost us over $2,500 for the whole project. Did you just have the discretion to proceed to do it? Yep.
To amend that by 600. I'd like to amend that 2,500 to 600.
You may have to have an appraisal, that's what she's after, and I don't know exactly the price of that.
Madam Chair, can I
on the side.
Don't we have somebody within the state government archives or library, somebody can ship this thing, take a look at it, if it's bad, and stick an archive if it's good, hang on the wall? I mean, this.
Randy, if it's a $50,000 painting we're talking about, you don't treat it in a relaxed manner. If it's a, if it has a solid gold frame on it, or.
It depends on your values. I don't value art all that much, but, you know.
If we're accepting something for the people of Alaska, I mean, we have to do it with a certain amount of insight and respect. I mean, it could be a piece of junk, and we just don't know. If it's lodged in Laguna, you don't want to move it until you have some idea of its value and its condition.
Okay, but the guy on the other end who owns this thing should know, right? He's an artist.
Well, artists have different concepts of their work. Or, I mean, if the thing is an oil painting and it's 50 years old and it's all chipped, are we going to send it up?
What?
Cracked? I mean, all
cracked.
Yeah,
but I have to spend all kinds of money.
I can see that we have some diverse views concerning this issue. Please give me the authority to pursue this. And I assure you that, even though I value my colleague, that I won't waste their money. Do you withdraw your amendment or still wish to pursue?
I withdraw the amendment, Madam Chairman, if I may, just a moment. We're making a big deal out of this. Why don't we contact the art museum or something in Laguna and have an expert go over and look at it, tell us the condition. This gentleman doesn't care how much, what the appraisal is, because he doesn't want that. He just wants to donate it. Our problem is, do we want to ruin it by shipping it in that condition, and then someone down there call us up and say, yeah, it's an excellent condition, it'll withstand the rigors of transportation, and we just send it up here.
Check in with them. There's a motion before you. Senator, would you restate your motion, please?
I would move that discretion be given to the chairperson to examine and ship if it's found to be adequate, and to have the fund of $2,500 to do this. I suspect it won't cost over $1,500. Got to have somebody carefully pack it, and I've gone through it. I've got boxes for paintings, and then the little appraisal that has to be made so that you can insure it. Costs a little bit of money, but it's well worth it if it's an item of $1,000 or more value. It's just a really good investment for it, let alone historic and other reasons for it.
Is there objection to the motion? Everyone understand the motion?
No, I'll object to that. I'll go with the other one.
Jackson, there is no difference in call the vote, please.
Senator Petula?
Call the vote, please, sir.
You're voting, don't you?
Oh, yes.
Representative Golden, please.
Aye.
Representative Miller?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
No.
Representative Ulmer?
Yes.
Senator Booth?
Yes.
Senator Bennett?
He's checking out.
Senator, please. Representative Cale?
Yes.
Representative Davidson?
Yes.
Senator Biggs?
Yes.
Madam Chairman?
Motion carried.
What's your vote?
I'm lost.
Representative Grisendorf?
Yes.
If motion carries, 10 days, 1 May.
Thank you. We have, I think all of you have in your pocket, a letter from John Sun. There's definitely a son here. While we are waiting then for Representative Sun, I'll just like to ask you, while he's coming to bring up his point of contention, it'd be my intention to point subcommittee to look at our moving and travel policy for the beginning and end of the session. And in that line,
Chairperson, I recognize that you're going to do this. I'm wondering if you hand out a consider a look at providing more than one trip back to a constituency during a session, at least, as well as the coming going. At least look at that policy. I think that everyone, it at least ought to be discussed, possibility of providing transportation back and forth.
Then I would ask the subcommittee if they would take that under advisement. As they're looking at it, I'd like to ask Vice Chairman Copeland, now Representative North, and Senator Petula, if they would serve on that committee, please report to us.
If Representative Copeland takes the strong lead, I'll be happy to share. That's the word.
Let me know if you don't like the subcommittee approach, but it's been my my habit during the years to share as much of the workload as possible with other members on my committees. And if there's objection from you, please so stay as we start through this. And I just like to see the work done and get done. We're going to have a lot of things to do.
It's a good matter. It's a big matter and bring a report.
Thank you very much. Do we still have Representative Scott? Yes.
Madam Chairman, I know the Senate Rules Chairman is looking at various staffing policies, and removing allowance for staff needs to be in consideration. The Finance Committee staff get some stipend of moving. Nobody else does, and I think we need to. If you're going to talk about moving, you might want to look at that as a part of the information gathering process.
I had limited it to the end and beginning and end of session because that was the item before us, but I have no objections to expanding the duties of that such amendment.
I have a question. Are you saying that finance, the staff of the finance has moving privileges?
There is a small, like $500 a piece, yes, sir. I've learned that since I have been under that. There's definitely a double thing.
Well, I think we ought to get rid of it.
It has to be a ledge council policy.
Well, I understand that, but I mean, if it's a double standard, I'd assume we'll get the way.
Well, I know that I'm sticking my neck out of it, but I'm
That's been a
Any word from Representative Sound?
No, I'm sorry.
Very well. I think all of us are aware of the issue. If the letters in your packet. If you have further questions, you know how to reach me. You also have in your packet the revises bill. I asked Dave if he would come in and briefly go through that revises bill. I know some of you have questions, and I do as well. But if we're to pass that on the Rules Committee, we need to know what we're doing. Dave?
Hey, members of the committee, welcome to the revised bill. I will take very much time, but you should know that the Judiciary Committee will move this finally come before we're through with it. About half the material in here is being deleted because it's obsolete, and about the other half is correction of stuff for a variety of reasons. If you look at the obsolete provisions, about half of those are time-related. It's something that happened in 1975 and then happened again, or initial members of the board or commission or whatever. About half of it is because of other actions of this legislature, the federal government, the courts, or in some way, what we have now in the book is obsolete. The corrections is about evenly divided between oversights or errors that we're taking care of, things that we missed last year or 10 years ago or 20 years ago we're now discovering. And about half of the corrections are because of other actions, other actions of this legislature, again, Congress or the courts or whatever. A little bit of it is conforming language, tying things together in either bundles, if you will. And a little bit of it is just getting rid of some redundancies with the statutes to try to trim them down a little bit for the surplus. There are 59 sections plus an effective date section. There are, I hate to say this, six more provisions that we've discovered since Sister Hat was written. We'd like to get in through an amendment in the first committee because we're trying as much as possible to tie our annual revisions bill to our annual score of replacing titles of the statutes. And this year we're doing Title 8, Title 14, Title 16, 35, 36, 39, and 46, I think, are the titles. And we'd like to get as much of the material of those titles that needs to be checked in there so that the new handbooks can be as good as we can get them right now. If we keep this up in the right way, eventually this bill will tighten up, maybe even, no, whatever, it'll reduce down better. And it's actually tighter and better and easier to use. So. If you have questions about particular ideas, last hearing.
I had a question on Section 21 and again on Section 38 as to whether or not there was some interpretation of what was thought to be legislative intent, whether indeed it was, or whether or not, in reality, Section 38 went a wee bit beyond what is in the statute. Some of these things I'd like to bring to your attention as a council and as it goes through the various judiciary committees, et cetera. I want to compliment you first on the fact that you did not gloss over where those things were occurring, that you were very open about it, and I truly appreciate that, David. There are some questions, though, in my mind, concerning Section 21 on that question of legislative intent and on Section 38. Some of this was to me a little cloudy, as the, you know, because it refers to different areas. Could you clarify for me if there is some change, in fact, in 38 and in 34 and in 21 that does indeed extend the law or might law or as according to interpretation of legislative intent?
Section 21, take first things first. As I pointed out in the analysis, the suggestion from the Department of Law is also an analysis they had to do for the Department of Education on the powers of the Commission on Post-Secondary Education. And this, if that opinion and that analysis is correct, this is putting express language in the statute to cover a power they have by implication and that they feel they need that. Now, this is a good example of a section that I think that I, as an advisor, have an obligation to present to the legislature as a potential source of difficulty, a potential problem, or a real problem, that may be more than housekeeping. This may be a conscious policy choice that a legislature made some time ago to not include Part B of Title IV in these powers. It may be that this panel is wrong, the implied power isn't there. But there is a problem that's brought to your attention in this bill, because the Judiciary Committee wants to get rid of it, the floor wants to get rid of it. That's your responsibility. Mine, I think, is to bring it to your attention. Now,
I flagged it, David, because in Hess Committee last year, we did have a bill that was expressly against what is in here, and that they did not feel that DOE had that authority. So I just flagged that for the council's benefit. Go ahead, David.
In Section 38, we're looking at the same material as submitting the AS 36.0 and subjecting suits under that section 208.18.151, as well as the district court or superior court. The language which says a suit under the section subject to AS 08.18.151 is merely putting in the statutory law what the Supreme Court has said is the law. This is which sign the revisor does also, as we find that the court says this is the way law is, folks, and we want to make the statutes, you know, harmonize the statutes with the interpretations the court has made.
Although, many times, you don't want that to happen, you want to overrule the court, and I respect that as a legislative prerogative. In this case, it was felt that, again, it ought to be brought to your attention that this decision has been made. This is a little different case than the usual one we talked about in our order set report. The District or Superior Court is a reflection of many other changes you've been making in the alignment of jurisdiction between District and Superior Courts and trying to keep that tracking throughout all of the laws that are just in the areas you have to touch. One of the things that I've been doing as a matter of policy in my operation is to work very closely with the court system and with the Department of Law to try to bring as much of these kinds of problems together as possible and get them in the revisers bill so you don't have a quasi-revisers bill from the governor or the Department of Law and another one from the court system. We're trying to pull together this thing. So some of these, as you can see from my memo, our ideas that came from outside of our office, a good portion of them were suggestions. And that's why we're planning a little bit more of these sessions that raise some questions to whether maybe they should be completed. And every year since I've been revising, some sessions have been taken out and referred to substantive committees, and that's fine. That's wonderful. At least you know now that there's a problem in this area and something that one of your substantive committees is going to deal with. And we deal with it by dropping it, just as easily as being positive.
I think it's fine to send in the revisor's copy. Very good revisor and send it to the standing committees for work. Just been my experience. For instance, from here we're discussing admission of foreign students and some other things that probably come from other ideas of various pressures. But I have had an experience with previous revisors in which they like to change law, so the law themselves. And we've had no, for instance, it was as fringy as there were two areas of the law speaking to two subjects. One of them amended out with the other lecturers, and then we amended the other area out too. Or the one I really remember is my favorite on the clerkship approach to the study of law. And the revisor statute just knocked it out because some of the attorneys wanted it out. It was a nice and simple way to work too when they couldn't get through the general statutory appeal process. I'd say look at it. All revisers work a bit.
We have one power that I don't dare exercise. I mean, I'm not going to, until my last year here, after I'm well vested and ready to go off on a cruise or something, that is, we have the ability, believe it or not, by statute, it's probably a good power because it could be used with good discretion. But it's something to abuse. And that is, if you repeal something, and that repeal impliedly and very clearly impliedly repeals some other part of the law, we actually can delete it from the statutes. We can take it out. One of the things I've been doing is putting things back in the statutes that were determined to be obsolete or deleted by other previous revisers but were not formally acted on by the legislature. And I've been getting you to repeal those things in the revisers bill as I go along. I don't think it's my job to put something in small print and say it's obsolete or to put in, even though I have statutory authority to do so. I respect you too much and respect myself too much to put my neck out that far. I like this job. And I like Juno. I'm a sincere.
David, that's one of the reasons I complimented you, because you did say it's blanket 34 is not required as a matter of law, but is a recommended change. And you were not trying to hide. And that was not my intention to imply that. Representative Phillips?
Essentially, I was going to say the same thing that Senator Cruz Cachula's mentioned too. There once in a while, years ago, there was a few hookers in there. It's too late. They've done a good job the last 2 or 3 years.
If I put a hooker in there, it's not intentional, actually.
The thing I just wanted, David, to make sure that we brought to your attention and to the attention of the committee that as we send this to rules, it would be my intention, I mean, yes, two rules, it would be my intention to flag those areas where I felt that it had been brought to our attention that there was a policy call, so that it would not appear that we on the legislative council were saying we supported the bill as written, but that we supported the bill, we were passing the bill to them by request of the council, which is the way it should go, but that we were flagging areas in which we felt there was definitely a need to look at what could be construed as a policy change.
Thank you. Are you going to send us the rules or the judiciary?
The rules introduces it. We pass this rule for introduction by request of the council.
Yeah, I understand that. But maybe a little confused. Committee referral would be the judiciary, right?
That's
okay. I know, I understand that. But
we may choose to send it.
They may just.
So you were trying to avoid lawyers, is that what you're saying?
Every day.
CRA, John.
Never can tell.
I did want to flag it, though, because I do feel that there are some areas. Do you feel, David, that there are some other areas that we should flag? So would 48 qualify as that? And I don't know if I mentioned 53. There's, you know, there are a few areas through there. I'll work with David if we do decide to send it through to make a letter of flagging some of these areas.
Sections 23 to 25, I don't really think fit into that same category, but it may very well be the financial resources committees, the judiciary committees. I'm sure at least one of those two saw that bill in 83 and 84. It was the governor's big fishing game bill, I'm sure you remember. There were some oversights in that we finally discovered and caused some problems for. Potential problems for the magistrate courts, in other words, in terms of what penalties really are. They tried to make penalties uniform and they didn't end up forgetting about some others. There's no way you can avoid substantive law change in a revisor's bill, even though people say there's no changes in the law. But Section 23 to 25 are an excellent example of that. We're making some, it's arguable that we're making some law changes in the law. We are making changes in the law. We hopefully are clarifying and correcting and solving problems and not making major policy shifts, but we are changing the law. And experience that you can't amend the law without changing it, no matter how clean the amendment is. So that one is one which may appear a little bit touchy to some folks. And the legislature needs to take a look at actually every one. There's some that I may think just because there's a date that's passed is obsolete, whereas in fact, some department somewhere is still hanging in heaven. Maybe they shouldn't be, but maybe they are. We found that to be true in the old teacher salary schedules. There's one subsection left in that law that looks like it's as obsolete as all the rest, but it's still necessary for a very, very real pragmatic purpose, and so it's not reviewed yet. It stands up real by itself. So you say, just because I say that it's obsolete, that's my judgment. It's been bounced off some other folks, but still, it's your judgment whether my judgment is correct.
Thank you, David. Is there anything more you'd like to say on addressing this legislation?
I recommend it be introduced in the House.
Tradition has it, sir. It involves the House of Chairmanship Council. That's what I was talking about. So it's been in the House the last two.
Yes, but sure, you'll stay out of trouble all session.
I think that turns to Ruski, you'll have a subcommittee.
Are there further questions from members of council concerning this piece of legislation? What is your pleasure? Shall we then send it through as a revisor's bill? We need a motion to approve the bill for submission.
So who have been asking that was consent?
Their objection. Shall I proceed then to flag as we send it through, make a motion?
What was that?
Pratt. Shall I flag these areas as we move them? Is there objection? so be it.
How was that?
Thank you very much, David.
Thanks.
Down to the meeting times of, been my hope that we would set aside at least every 2 weeks, and then with a great deal of notice when it wouldn't be needed. I don't want to have meetings for meetings' sake. Is there a time, or are you, we've had suggestions of Saturday, we've had suggestions of Tuesday afternoon at 5. I'd like to know what your pleasure is, if there's a time that is more convenient. Shall I hold, or shall I just set it and so we have it?
Madam Chair, you have 11 members here, right? And was there a conflict with any of the members right now that are sitting here for this afternoon to meet? 11 out of 14? That's a lot better vetting every last 2 years.
There are some members, though, who do have committee meetings, I think, at that time. We could put it 5 o'clock and avoid all of them, I think. Shall we try 5 then and then see every 2 weeks? And I promise you, I will notify you well in advance.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
How long will those meetings, well, we don't know how long these from the last night, one of the Tuesdays, 7 o'clock.
Well, if these meetings go to 2 hours, we're going to have to make some changes.
Yeah.
Teleconference, etc. I would hope that we can move along rather quickly, because you'll have the materials well in advance and be able to promote them. Then we will keep the Tuesday afternoons at 5 o'clock without objection.
Why 5? Why not 4?
Because the committee meeting's 3:30 to 5.
I see no problems unless we get into an art debate.
Are there comments from members of the committee that you'd like to make before we get to adjournment? Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I do have one small item. I would like to address my lonely dissent on the matter of security. While I have the gravest concern for the safety and security of my valued colleagues, I think that armed guards before an edifice do not necessarily guarantee respect and honor to that edifice. And therefore, I would think that perhaps that $30,000 would be better spent training staff or even ourselves to disarm the demented ones, and thereby let us take control of this edifice and not the demented ones or those with guns.
Thank you. That's how you call it, so
we can move to the third floor.
Yes.
Are there any other comments from members of the committee? In looking over some of the things that have been brought to my attention, I'd like to also appoint a subcommittee to look at our per diem policy. There's been some question on that. Legislative affairs have come up with some recommendations, and I'd like to ask Senator Bennett, Senator Boone, and Representative Ulmer if they would serve to work with Pam to bring us what you see as the cleanest policy possible, and let's take a look at that before we adopt it and do that right away, since there's some question on it.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to ask, what is the scope of this? It isn't surely to define what the deal is. What is the scope?
But I do have one question after the vote.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Yeah.
Warren, on the lawsuit by the Alaska Christian Bible Institute, what came of that? Never heard anything about it afterwards.
I don't think anything was ever filed. Virginia Regal is here from the attorney's office and will give us any information on all of the lawsuits that are outstanding.
Representative, if we could just hold on that then until the minutes are approved. Yes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? So be it. We have then the executive director's report, and maybe in that, Warren, you could please answer the executive question.
Yeah, I think it's best, Virginia has given us a, there's a memorandum here too, that we can give to members of the council. We did not get this in the packet, apologize for that. Hand it down.
Is it there, too?
Well, I think that we've had a fairly good interim period through the agency. We made a lot of, I think, progress on data processing and got a lot of administrative things cleaned up that, I think will make the agency work better and enable us to assist the legislature itself in a better way also. We do have a procurement code that we have to adopt for the legislature. I will have that available for the next meeting of the council to review, and we have until July before that needs to be adopted. I think it'll clean up a lot of things that needed some work on. With that, I'll just leave it. Any questions any members may have at this time out, I'd be glad to answer. I'll give you plenty of time in the future.
Would you please show on the roll call so that anyone is present? Are there questions of the executive director as far as the summons activities? Very well. And we'd like to ask for a report on the status of the lawsuits. Virginia, would you just introduce yourself, please, as Attorney General's office?
I'm Virginia B. Grable. I'm here with the Department of Law to respond to Mr. Endicott's request that I advise the agency and the council on the status of lawsuits being handled by the Department of Law. First,
Virginia, before you start, is there any reason at all that any of this would have a client legal relationship so that we'd need to close the meeting, or is it all?
Nothing that I intend to have such a problem, so I think the executive session is necessary. The good news is that the case of Alaskans removed their arms control political action committee versus Charney, which involves a challenge to this council's policy concerning use of a legislative teleconference network, has been dismissed by stipulation. Has been dismissed with prejudice. That happened just last week. So that case is no longer with us. The two remaining cases in which the Department of Law is representing the agency, first is Ken Barron's company versus the state. That involves the cancellation of a lease with the Barron's company about a year and a half ago. We moved the Superior Court to dismiss that case and remand the Superior Court. The court did so. A hearing has been conducted before the Department of Administration in that case, and it's now just pending decision by a hearing officer rather than the new advisor to the outcome of that. Assistant Attorney General Susan Cox is handling that case, and she can be reached at 465-3600 members who wish to get further information on the case. The second case is the case of Brown versus State. That case involves a midnight contract between Mr. Riley and former Senator George Homan in 1981 that was repudiated by the Legislative Council. After the outcome of the case, a decision by the Supreme Court in the Dupuyer case, Mr. Riley filed an original action in the Superior Court last year. I reported that case to the council last year, and upon advice and motion of the council, I filed a motion to dismiss, which the court granted, that allowed Mr. Riley to proceed in the administrative appeal before the Department of Administration. A hearing officer has just been assigned to hear that case, and I expect it will proceed in a matter of, I would say, 4 to 8 weeks, because we're hearing on that case. Again, involves the contracts. Oddly, handling that case, and we have to find the members passing the further specific information on that case. That is the only case that I know, these are the only cases I know of that are still proceeding that we have now with Department of Law.
This is a case where somebody from Houston, Alaska, filed on behalf, I think it's Alaska Baptist Institute or whatever, about the stopping of the clock on the 120th day. And as I understand it, it was a handwritten brief delivered to the courthouse here. That's the last I've heard of it. So I was just asking, what was the status since then?
I haven't heard anything further about it, and it's not on our case management list. It's being handled as of this time, so I can find out what the outcome of that case was in court to.
Madam Chairman, according to our minutes here, Madam Chairman, that we were not officially served.
Sure.
So there's nothing there going on.
That was the way I recalled it, that we, there was no official.
Lots and lots of happening. In 5 months or 6 months, they're here, but so we're just like.
Well, it wouldn't hurt to check on the appreciate that very much. Tam, do you have any information on that?
I have been trying to monitor that case, and originally Jim Paulin was working on it, and it may be that if they shifted over to one of their assistant attorneys in his absence now. The last I heard, the state did file a reply, and I checked with Jim just before he left the AG's office, and there had been no further action at that point.
Thank you. Jim Virginia, if you would, please. Are there other, anything else that you have to report? Are there questions from members of the council?
Chairman, if what need does the council need to have her investigate that and come back to finding them if there's no formal complaint made, the matters have been dropped, why would we bother ourselves with that?
To find out if there is no formal complaint and if the matter has been dropped.
I understood you to say that it was.
Yeah, Representative Martin, I guess, is continuing that case. So there is something happening.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and we'll look forward to hearing from you. Thank you. Are there further questions? Thank you very much. So the next item on the agenda is the funding for the membership fees in the National Conference State Legislators, Council of State Governments, Civic Fisheries Task Force, and the Western States Legislative Forestry Task Force. Is there a discussion from
what are the fees?
What are the fees, please?
They're in your packet, sir.
35, 42.
35,000.
35,000. 45,000.
45,000. 45,000. 45,000. Council of State Governments is 35,000. Civic Fisheries Task Force is 5,700. Western States Legislative Forestry Task Force is 3,500. What is the pleasure of council? Would you like to take these individually or as a group?
Chairman, I think for some of the newer members might want to explain, give a brief history of why we're doing this, because some might get a little nervous about spending $35,000 for what.
Okay. For those of you who have not been here, we have been active members of these groups. I was attempting to get at least last year's report on our many requests from the National Conference of State Legislators. Senator Fakes, would you care in any way to address the usage of that group and how we've used it?
The Council of State Legislatures comes and is a resource capability for us that we can actually call any time of the day or night that they're open and get information from them. They hold hearings throughout the country in a variety of places on issues that have importance to not only the state of Alaska, but the western part of the United States as well. In 2 weeks, they're holding a conference in Washington, D.C., in which legislative leadership has been invited, in which you will interface with members of the cabinet as well as the president of the United States. So it has a variety of issues that have been important to us. The research is excellent. We just contacted them yesterday about having a model dairy code sent up here, and they're gathering that information from the dairy states and sending it up to us, a constituent of mine that had a need to know about a grading system for eggs and milk. So it's a wide spectrum. They have informational conferences. They deal with issues that are politically sensitive as well as opportune to the time, and I think it's a very good system that we're involved in.
Thank you very much. As far as Council of State Governments, it is not duplicative for the NCSL, which is National Conference of Legislators. That is, Council of State Governments is made up of attorneys general, lieutenant governors, secretaries of state, accounting departments, legislative branch, and has some subsidiary groups to which they furnish secretariat. In the Council of State Governments, we have four divisions, which is the Western, Eastern, Central, and Southern. And the Western Conference, of which we're most involved, is 13 Western states plus the territories. The seven issues that will be addressed this year are current issues. We were all polled on those. We polled legislators, leadership, etc. The membership of that group is made up through appointees of the speaker and the president, as well as those elected to serve in annual conferences. We'll have a report on both of these activities on the floor as far as the summer actions in meetings this summer. By the way, I served as chair-elect on the Western States Conference, Council of State Governments, and that post I'm very proud of us. I think all of you know that we've spent a great deal of money through the years trying to tell Alaska's story to other legislators. One of the resolutions that we got through both Council of State Governments on the Western level and at the annual meeting in Orlando, Florida, was the Anwar resolution concerning adding 18 million more acres to the wilderness area. We worked this year in the fields of hazardous waste, in which we in the state of Alaska are trying to implement our new hazardous waste procedure and take over that from the federal government for help in those areas. We have education and health, and that and the funding for that, those and new ideas that are coming up. One of the things that I found most interested this year was the use of school buildings for childcare during the school day, and many of the superintendents and principals who were invited there to that conference told us a great deal about how they are supplementing their libraries, etc., with funds from that $15 a week. Just little things of that nature. Are there further questions concerning Council of State Governments and National Conference of State Legislators? On the Pacific Fisheries Task Force, I can think of no task force other than Ocean Group that could be of more importance to the state of Alaska. And on the Western States Legislative Forestry Task Force, Senator Lyson, I know from our side, has been very active in that area. I also think Senator Jarl, if it not, serves on that committee. Anyone else have anything they would like to add? And the chair would accept the motion concerning these yes.
Chair, if you like, the motion is to go all the way to one. We continue our membership of Council of State Governments and create the sum of $35,000 to that end. to our membership in National Conference of State Legislators, appropriated $42,446 for them. Our membership in Pacific Fisheries Legislative Task Force, appropriating $5,700 for that end. And in the Western State Legislative Forestry Task Force, appropriating $3,500 for that.
Motion's been made, is there objection? Did I hear you?
No, I was just thinking a roll call vote.
If you wish one, you have.
Ashton Ashenson?
Yeah, that's what I was.
There are no objections, so be it. The next issue before us is the subscriptions to Alaska Legislative Digest, Alaska Economic Report, and the Legislative Reporting Service. The cost associated with the Alaska Legislative Digest and Alaska Legislative Economic, Alaska Economic Report is $25,000 more from last year, and the Legislative Reporting Service is $67,320. I had asked Tim Bradner from the A Group to take about 5 minutes, and then followed by Kimberly Metcalf Helmer to take about 5 minutes on the Legislative Reporting Service. Tim?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just for the record, my name is Tim Bradner. I'm the editor and publisher this year in the Alaska Legislative Digest and the Alaska Economic Report. For the past several years, we've had a package of subscription arrangements with the legislature for all members of the House and Senate and the 15 legislative information offices for full package subscription. I'm sure maybe you all see the Legislative Digest. It comes out weekly during the session. We have monthly interim reports that come out in sessions. The Alaska Economic Report, which comes out bi-weekly, tracks major economic issues around the state. We also deal extensively with public policy issues that affect the state's economy, employment, resource development, that sort of thing. Anyway, we hope we've been useful to the legislature. In terms of looking toward this year in recognition of the state's financial circumstances, we had suggested that we take a we reduce our prices, and we have opted to do that. The normal package price that we negotiated with Cashman was $30,000 for all of the publications, and what we are suggesting is that we reduce it to $25,000 this year. So that would be available to answer any questions.
Are there questions with him?
What's the price for the year? I know it's $200 per session, but what is, I know you publish this thing year.
That's the normal, that's the full price.
Oh, I'm thinking of the economic thing.
Yeah, okay. That's for both publications, that's the normal price. It would actually work out with something less, considerably less, but that's what we're trying to do.
Are there further questions? Thank you.
I'm sorry, Madam Chairman. Let me have just 1 second.
It's $177,966. No sense. I had one together.
You're reducing 17% off $45,000?
No, sir. Our price last year was $30,000. And we're reducing it to
$25,000. Oh, I see. Okay.
I think
secondly, what does this, may I progress just one step further into the next request here for a legislative reporting service?
Let's see.
Are they different? I just want to see the difference between them. They are absolutely different than that.
I'll show you the.
No, I've seen it. I just want to know whether or not we're duplicating anything.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, council members, my name is Kim Metcalf-Nelmore. I am the publisher of the Legislative Reporting Service. It comes in a binder, and I'm sure you're all fairly familiar with the report. I produce it weekly during the legislative session, and what I do basically is read bills and write summaries of the bill. I compare committee substitutes to the original bills, some of the changes that the committees have made. I follow every bill that comes out during the session through the entire two-year legislature. This is my ninth year of providing this service to the legislature. I think I've been around and talked to almost everyone of you about the service. The price hasn't changed in 3 years. I don't think it's really the time to be increasing the price of the service. We give you a 20% discount over what we give private subscribers. We feed information to clearinghouses in the lower 48, which is Commerce Clearinghouse. Their main focus is tax law.
Are there questions of members of the committee?
I have one question that comes up every so often. Is this service available on our at our fingertips now on our computers and equipment that ties in? Of course, there's a synopsis that may or may not be available on every bill. I'm just questioning at what stage do we or don't we continue to need this particular service? I suppose it's come to the lawn party if you can ask the question. But I have a curiosity because we have invested considerably in upgrading the equipment, which allows us to source our materials and keep on top of legislation. I think one of these days, the time will come when service, unless it has other attributes that I don't see at the moment, is going to be redundant to legislative needs. That's all. It's a good service. I don't argue the value of the service if we don't have the alternate opportunities that we have pretty much now available to us. It's just a question I have.
If I could ask you something. As far as I know, all that's on your computer is a short title of the bill that's given to the bill by legislative affairs. And I'm quite sure that this is not a redundant service.
Well, but I think, and just to expand on Senator Petullo's line of questioning, could it be a service for the legislative affairs?
It's my understanding that we're working towards that capability. Would you like to
Madam Chairman, the system today does have, it has the entire text of the bill through stairs, but it's not in the same format, obviously, as what the legislative reporting system provides through the legislative reporting service. And I guess it would be the problem if we were to summarize a bill. I imagine there would be problems with whoever on my staff were to do that summary. The sponsor or someone opposed to that bill might not like the analysis we made. That's the problem that I can see. That we state that the bill does a particular thing, and boy, the sponsor doesn't see it that way at all. Or that we didn't say enough of what the bill did. I think that's the major problem. We could certainly put a synopsis on the computer, make it available, change it as required if it was necessary, but so the ability may be there.
I have another point of view. I mean, this is, to me, if somebody out there in private industry is doing it, they're going to do it a lot cheaper than what we would do in state government. So, I really don't want the government or whatever you want to call it getting into something like this where private industry is doing it right now. So, and probably be doing it cheaper than the state would ever be able to do it. So, with any of those services, as far as I'm concerned, private industry can do it and meet those needs at a cheaper cost. better off we're going to do in the long run. That's just a general philosophical point of view on my part, because you're going to have, you know, the state employees are going to pay a lot more to get.
In trying to investigate this for today, I had I've spoken with a number of legislators as to their usage of both of these packages, and there's varying opinions throughout as far as what I've heard. It would be my intention, unless there's objection from this body, then to conduct on the part of council a poll to see the usage, whether or not the analysis of our legislation that travels with the packet is sufficient for those in office, whether both packages are both services are desired by the legislature. According to my calculations, there's roughly $92,000 involved. If it meets with your approval, that's the approach I've taken to report to you next session. Would that be it?
Chairperson?
Yes.
I would like to comment, because I'm as interested in Freeman Prize and Freeman Prize as the next person in this room. I'm a farmer, and I think that they're right down at the Freeman Prize level, if any group of America are, particularly small family farmers. The point I have, though, is if we already have the capability and we're already paying for it, and it's not a substantial added cost to do these briefings, and then is this redundant? Isn't that we're perhaps some other service that these particular people could provide is of greater importance to us for the same amount of money, or would add to it even? I'm not trying to wipe them out. It's just a question I think needs to be taken up. We slid over it for 2 or 3 or 4 years, and this conversation is a repetition of one previously, or the statement is. And I'm concerned about the future of people provided this system, the history and the memory, and the fact that they've done a good job at it, and haven't got any conflict. And from that standpoint, I might well vote for it. But the point is, I think it ought to be brought up. Like, is it being used? Is it necessary? Because we undoubtedly will be called upon to reduce funds at the legislative level this year. That's the reason I bring it up. I'd rather sit right here and say, let's just go right along with the posture.
Then, if there's no objection from the committee, I'll ask a subcommittee to look into this and report to us. Senator Petula, would you please head that up? And since you expressed an interest, Randy, would you represent the folks? And would you care to, as a
welcome to Twilight Zone.
So we will expect then a report from you at the next meeting, which I hope will be in approximately 2 weeks. We'll send that for the
business. That might be a short period of time, but we can do some more progress on it.
Thank you very much. And
just for, you think we're going to be meeting in 2 weeks, so at least they'll know one way or another.
Yes. I don't know about the rest of you who have been members of council, but I've been very discouraged by meeting will be at this time, and then it's canceled, and then it's next time, and it's canceled. It would be my desire today to set a regular time that you all know when it is, in a regular period, so that you can do your scheduling early in the year, and we can have attendance at our council meetings and take care of business. We've handled it, and I have no reflection on any past councils, since I've been part of it, but we've handled it rather at a hit and miss level, and I would prefer not to continue that. Senator.
Might be advisable. I think you're right. You ought to have a set time. However, if there isn't a great deal of material to take up at any one particular council meeting, you might advise in advance to cancel it for the next one. I mean, there might come times in which there's that much work.
Senator, that's my intention. Also, while we're at it, a lot of times we receive these materials very late. It'll be my intention for us to have the materials that we're going to consider at least 24 hours ahead, and preferably longer ahead, so that you have a chance to look at it, talk with your co-workers, and make decisions that have been well thought out. Thank you very much, and we'll expect to hear from the committee at our next meeting. It's been brought to, yes?
I'm sure, on this point, I wonder, does it make any sense for this council to consider approving these subscriptions for this year and having the committee look at the wisdom of changing our system of recording and keeping information internally for next year? We're into the second year, the second week of a new legislative session. These small businesses have done a certain amount of business planning, probably relying on these contracts. And I just wonder if, you know, if we are going to change the Legislative Affairs Agency reporting system, and if Warren needs to think about if he needs additional staff or if he has existing staff that do this kind of work, if that isn't a longer-term discussion that ought to take place.
I think that is a longer-term discussion. However, I think we do need to look at whether or not we are within our own offices, you know, making use of these subscriptions, and whether or not we do have the service available through our own research people. So it would be my intention for Tim and for Kimberly to get this settled as quickly as we can and back to you, in fairness to you. But I think in fairness to the committee, we do need to take a good look at it.
Madam Chair, I think we just approved $25,000.
No, we haven't.
We haven't. Okay.
I have had brought to my attention, and you have in your packets, a memorandum concerning building security. As you all know, that changed this past year. I've asked Warren to prepare a memorandum for us and let us know exactly where we were. And I think it may be necessary for us to either look at this meeting or the next meeting in setting a policy between our alternatives. Warren, would you go through that with us, please?
Well, as I pointed out, the building security unit that was within the Department of Public Safety was disbanded last August. And from that point on, we have had no building security, being security checks at night, a person to call to contact if you have a parking problem, if you need entrance into an office. And we have done without any of those services until January 15th. And at that time, I did hire two security people to provide coverage for the floor sessions, and they will also be in the building from, well, one or the other will be in the building from 7 o'clock in the morning until 5 in the evening. We're stretching those hours to cover the building from 6 in the morning until 9 at night so that we can open the doors and lock them up at 9 in the evening. Also with our building maintenance people. So if you do have a problem at the number that is given for security, you can get a hold of someone between 6 and 9. That's assuming they're not out of tracking down some other problem at that time. It's very minimal coverage, I realize that. We did go out for a bid from private contractors, basically it's a quote type thing, to see just what the service would cost to go around, to provide around the clock service, meaning to provide service beyond 5 p.m. and on until 7 in the morning, and also the 48 hours during the weekends. The service that we have asked for would be a type of guard that wears a uniform and does not wear a gun. They would be here primarily to do a security check if windows are open, coffee pot on, those types of things. Also, they would be in the Capitol lobby. If someone needed to come in, they could get in. On the access to offices, I think there I would like to know what each office feels, who does have access to that office, and who can get in when they lose a key. I know there's nothing more maddening than if you have a right to be in an office, you know you have a right to be in the office, and say you want in, but just maybe if it's not your office, and really how does the security guard that works at night and certainly doesn't know anyone in the building, how do they know just which office you should be in? So we would have to have some guidelines there. If we do go to that level of service, actually building security in the past was not really supposed to let anyone in the room, but they always did. Considered good security. So we have the option. I think what our bids would be, would they would run the neighborhood of $21,000 for the remainder of the session, February 15th on, by the time we get the bids in, if you have any selection. Or we could provide 24-hour coverage with basically the same type of personnel that was here in the past. It would be people that did work for the building security unit, or were ex-state troopers or ex-police. It would be commissioned to carry a gun. And if that's the pleasure of the council, that service would run for approximately $31,000. So.
Senator Bennett?
I think it's interesting to note that in the history of this, public safety curtailed the security of this building when they were directed by the governor to cut back. And one of these things where it wasn't the building didn't need it, the people in the building didn't need it. It was a matter of the most convenient for public safety to cut out the coverage of this building. The next point is, it's interesting that Jay Hogan just presented to our finance committee the other day the fact that they're increasing the security to the governor. And they have been advised to do so on good authority from those who are experts in security. I'd like to point out one thing. That is that if you don't have people trained and present here to quell a disturbance or a potential assassination or what have you, and you might as well hire a secretary who shows up 20 minutes later with a notebook and a pencil to take down maybe what happened. If you're going to have prime intervention, you have to have somebody present. And I say one assassination attempt, one demented soul who decides he's going to rectify government, offsets any reasonable amount of security we can pay for. I would suggest that we, in fact, have security guards in the building at all times, and in fact, they do check the offices for cigarettes left, coffee pots plugged in, and various other things, at least during the session.
Senator Petula, then Senator Faye.
It's been my long experience that those that are working early and late, I don't care whether you're in the library or whether you're here, are the ones that have to get in trouble, and those are probably the ones that are as productive as any of us. I think we better be very careful to maintain security during those late hour and early hour periods. I think that'd be high quality security. I also think that the Commissioner of Public Safety ought to have a formal letter addressed to them from us suggesting that they maintain some type of security here, but if they won't do it, then we better hire it. I just think they can with the existing staff.
Thank
you, Madam Chairman. This is probably the only Capitol building in the United States without security. I'll put money on it. There has to be a respect for the building. And I realize our Capitol building is not of the magnitude of the majority of Capitol buildings around the country. But there's still a certain respect that the Capitol building itself should be shown. And I was here for 7 hours on Sunday. There was no security person in the building at all. Representative Brown's staffer got accidentally locked out of her office. It took us 25 minutes of continual calling to try to get the senator back into the office. If some problem had occurred, if there was a fire that occurred, I don't know what we would have done. So I think the situation is appalling, and I'd like to ask both finance chairmen to put a line item appropriation in the budget in public safety for this building, the Capitol building, and the state of Alaska's security.
Mr. Booth.
Madam Chairman, what are the, somebody explain to me what the funds from personal services in the executive administrative administration component of the legislative affairs, may I direct that to the director? Where's that money who's got? That is within the budget component of the legislative affairs agency, and we have held some positions, two positions. Is that the executive administration? It's data processing, actually it's data processing which falls within that component. Held one position, vacant, and subfilled another position, so it would give them a pass with funds. Madam Chairman, I'd like to move if we, it's proper if you wish a motion to accept this.
Our discussion would be more in order if we had a motion, sir.
I move that we accept the strictest of 24 hours security for the state capitol, its offices, with armed guards that are allowed to carry weapons, if you will, pay the money to help this accomplished until we end the session.
Madam Chairman.
Thank you, sir, could we further discuss?
We have one more senator that hasn't spoken on this, perhaps since it's a Senate problem, maybe you should take it out of Senate leadership.
Check.
We'd be more than happy to hear from the House, I've not had a signal for recognition by the sheriff, speaking through, but would you like to address it?
Madam Chairman, I'm just making an observation that every senator except one has spoken on the issue of security.
I'd like to make an observation that perhaps some of the House members have not been around long enough to have threats of death like some of us have. Maybe it's grudgy behaviors have been.
To rectify that situation, I have been here 6 years. I have been known to work late. My staff have been known to work late. The lack of security gives me a lack of security within myself. And I very definitely would like to see the building secure.
Just as an antidote, I visited 5 state capitals this interim in my travel. And some of those states meet every other year. In every state capital, there was armed security. And in Vermont, where they don't meet this year, there was someone on duty in the building. It's the building they're taking care of, much less the people. There's a respect. There's a protocol for the building.